Before I forget, if there's anybody who does, since you mentioned it, has an interest in preventing violence in schools or strategies to respond to violence in schools, at 12:30 in the Faneuil Room over at the Westin, I'm actually doing a presentation that addresses that. And there's also a more expanded one on the however you get to the speakers stuff on the web. Somebody has an interest in that. But what I'm going to talk about right now are really looking at some of the issues that particularly affect everywhere, but they're particularly relevant to rapidly urbanizing regions because in those cases, some of those areas haven't had as long a time to develop infrastructure, whether it's the quality of health care, whether it's the type of roads, whether it's the type of emergency response that some of the other already developed countries have, and yet they're dealing with the same issues of violence, natural disasters, urbanization. So some of the examples I'm going to give are going to deal with like some of the transportation challenges and what we should learn from some of the things in the United States that other countries should learn and do better than we do, and also looking at some of what makes the response effort effective. And then I'm going to talk about the importance of the preparedness of critical infrastructure and facilities. And in fact, that particular thing I handed out is an assessment that was initially done on a 40-facility, 100-acre school for the deaf in the United States before 9/11, and then it's been expanded and developed and used by all kinds of nonprofit, governmental, and even power plants for evaluation. So you might be interested in that, and you're more than welcome to use it, and there's one on the web, too. One of the areas I'm going to give you as an example is in the United Arab Emirates, which has been rapidly developing since 1970, and of all the deaths that are reported, 70% of the accidental deaths are reported to be related to a traffic accident somehow, pedestrian or car, and approximately 88% of those people who die are males. Now, why is that important? On an everyday basis, this is how many wrecks and that you have. Can you imagine during an evacuation or an emergency what you're going to do about using transportation effectively if every day you can't take care of people, particularly in areas where even though they've urbanized, there are no sidewalks for pedestrians on a good day, so you have a lot of pedestrians getting killed. But on a during an emergency or an evacuation, where are people going to walk? How are they going to get out of the area? And in a special thing, I don't know how many of y'all are familiar with big roundabouts, but in places like the UAE, they have six lanes of traffic zooming at about 70 miles an hour around a roundabout. Well, one of the things you want to do in an evacuation is to reverse the lanes of traffic and have everybody go the same way, like you would do in Georgia or Florida, where you reverse the interstates and have everybody go north. And roundabouts create huge special challenges, and you have to do a tremendous amount of not only training, but also some way to block some of those areas so you don't have people crashing into each other. How do you get the roads reversed? And you also have areas where people think, well, the fire and the police are going to do it. If I'm in a hospital, why should I worry? Fire police will deal with that. It's absolutely not true. And so road reversal is a big challenge. In China, you've got some of the same challenges, and you have a lot of people working in China that walk and ride bicycles, and 60% of the traffic-related deaths are pedestrians. And I'll tell you, if any of you haven't been there, if you can have five, six people all heading for the three lanes of traffic, and whoever's horn blows the loudest and has the most guts gets the three lanes of traffic. You know, I've seen buses backed out by other people. So if that's on a good day, so what are you going to do during a need for an evacuation or a natural disaster or an earthquake? And so, and 20% are motorcycles who kind of weave in and out of everything. So you've got new roads in some areas that, like, I think it's five rings around Beijing now, but it's rare to see really good sidewalks for people to be able to evacuate. In fact, I'm involved with a big new subway going in, and my interest in it is evacuation and fire protection. It'll be one of the biggest subways in the world. So that's just to give you some ideas of some of the problems. Now, what can you do about it? Well, pre-planning is critical, and collaboration is essential between all the local groups in an urban area. And I'll show you some of the characteristics that really improve collaboration, and also communication. All kinds of communication is critical, particularly if you're trying to evacuate an area. Now, and I just stuck this in here. This is from New Orleans. But if you don't have good evacuation, this is how you tell people you're in trouble. You see the word help written in the mud? That's because the people from that area did not have effective evacuation. And having been there the year before when Ivan hit, a bunch of us came home from the National Safety Council and wrote, here are all the things that would have happened in New Orleans if Ivan had hit, and unfortunately, we were right the next year. So it's very important to deal with things in advance. Warning and evacuation. You've got to have visual and audible warnings. You've got to meet the transportation needs of independent and institutionalized elderly, which obviously didn't happen in New Orleans. Those with special transportation needs, even 4 years, 5 years later, when New Orleans finally figured out they needed to evacuate people 2 or 3 hours north of New Orleans, yeah, they evacuated people. It took them 3 days to get toilets for people with disabilities. So you really have to think it out. You've got to plan. You've got to do every little detail. Also, you've got to have special transportation for those that are mobility limited. And medications have to go with people. And that requires a lot of training and a lot of practice to make sure that people who need medications have them, both the ones that live at home and the ones that are in hospitals, and particularly in urbanizing, developing regions where, for example, in UAE and many of the cities, all the ambulance services are private, and you have the Russian hospital, the American hospital, the hospital for people in the police force. None of that is coordinated. So who gets the ambulances? How are they coordinated? Who are they going to pick up? All those things have to be organized in advance with cooperative agreements. And unlike New Orleans, which is doing better now, you also have to make sure you don't double count for ambulances. So 5 nursing homes don't all have the same ambulances. It doesn't work. And speaking of nursing homes, it's always better, and we found out the hard way, to evacuate early for because trying to evacuate elderly people who were in assisted living, and people in assisted living now are really pretty bad off. It weren't than they were 20 years ago. They can't just jump up and run out by themselves. Early, because if you have to evacuate in the middle, you're dealing with a very transportation-limited population. You also need to have adequate supplies if you do shelter in place, but you really have to know what you're doing because now most states say you should be able to, the hospital should be able to stay 48 hours with no electricity, no food, and no water brought in, and no police force. So what are you going to do? How are you going to do it? Okay, some of the things that have messed up people historically are waiting to the very last minute to reverse lanes and evacuate. That happened in Louisiana. Public information is sort of the last minute, especially about sheltering in place. Poor coordination, confusion on who's going to do what with traffic, and you don't have a volunteer support system that's in place and operational. And sporadic plans are ill-defined, and people also use something called vertical evacuation. And if you're in an area with typhoons, hurricanes, tornadoes, bad storms, any hurricane is going to have tornadoes all around the edge. So the idea that you should vertically evacuate, which is what they did in New Orleans a lot, to go up to the top of the building so you don't get flooded out is dumb. And for years, Florida and Georgia and North South Carolina have quit doing it. They just don't do it. They get everybody out. So vertical evacuation is a very poor practice, and regardless of which country you're in. Some of the things you've got to be able to do, and you'll see these are parallel, are reverse lanes quickly, early, and make sure you've practiced it, like someplace like Dubai. You know, you've got to practice. You've got to know how you're going to get out, and what are you going to do with all those six-lane roundabouts going like this every 5 minutes? And because there are no corners, there are no stoplights, there are no places for people to cross the road. So it's very difficult for people on one side of that crazy place to get to the other side because a roundabout never stops. And roundabouts do help traffic flow, but during evacuation, and if you've got to get across the road fast, they also increase pedestrian hazards for sure. So those are some of the things to look at. But in the broad sense, got it, pre-planning, communication, education, awareness, and evaluation are all important. But in coordination, these are some factors that we found that are critical. Familiarity and trust. The more local units and response agencies work with each other on a day-to-day basis, the better they do. Ironically, small communities do better because the people go to church with them. They work with them every day. They know the people. So in a big urban area, you've got a bigger challenge. You've got to have effective communication, know the boundaries of each local agency so that and be resilient, have collaborative training and drills, and understand stress. The leaders of all the organizations have to know how to manage stress and that it's real. You also have to look at all your critical infrastructure in your urbanizing area, hospitals, schools, all the critical infrastructure that's important. And you've got to improve fire prevention. And I just wanted to show you an example. This is a way to get people out who are mobility limited that only requires one other person that's highly recommended, and a lot of hospitals in Singapore and other places are using them. These are just some of the benefits. You also need to have what's called a fire warden kit. So all the things you need are in one place on each floor of a hospital or a school. And it has things in it like bright colored vests and flashlights and, believe it or not, wire cutters and things so you can get people out of the situation. And now as we get to the handout that you have in front of you, every critical infrastructure, and that's whether it's private or public, should every 3 months go through this, like something like this, or this 10-point checklist to make sure everything in that facility exists and is operational. And I will give you an example. I was in the UAE, and they're having this big evacuation of the hospital, and we've been brought in, and they love these little fake smoke machines. And I'd sent this in advance and said, you ought to use it. And of course, one of the MDs said, this is too much work. So we get ready to start the evacuation training. They pull the fire alarm, and guess what happens? Nothing. Because those fire alarms had not been double-checked and inspected. And when do the lights go out, your emergency lights, if they're on batteries? So all of those things have to be checked on a regular basis and every 2 or 3 months. So kind of in a overview, you need to conduct pre-planning and hands-on training collaboratively, all the groups that are in that rapidly urbanizing area together. And you can't just say, well, those fire and people will do it. Because people tend to think, well, the police will do it, the military will do it, forget it. Doesn't work that way. So you have to practice everybody together, who does what where. You have to communicate. You have to maintain ongoing education and awareness. You've got to evaluate every time you do a training or you have a real event. And you've got to make sure every facility is ready. And that's where the 10-point checklist can come into play. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Dr. Smith, that was really good, and I think it kind of, this panel was really nice because, Laura, you started it off, and it was really set the tone, and then we had Jason, Brent, and, excuse me, Beth kind of complimentary, and then you summed it up all. So I think this is really nice, and thank you so much, and please join me in giving our stellar panel a big hand. Thank you, and thank you.